Welcome everyone to the RF Course Radio Show. I'm your host, Rodney Fisher. I'll be joined by my co-host, Royce Fisher, in just a second. We got a big show for you guys tonight. A lot going on in the world of sports, everything from Chad Johnson, who we just got a chance to see get cut on Hard Knocks. We're going to talk a lot about that. Dwight Howard and the trade to L.A. What does this mean for the Western Conference and also for the L.A. Lakers as well? Also, wrap up the Olympics, Team USA, who was the MVP for Team USA. And, of course, against the Dallas Cowboys, our hometown team here, had a preseason game that, let's just say, didn't go quite go as planned. We'll talk a lot about that. Again, we want to welcome everyone and remind you to go to our website, rfsportsradio.com, for more information. Also, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/rfsportsradio. So without further ado, let me bring on the patriarch of our show, the man who this show was all created for, so you get a chance to go to sporting events for free. And that's the one, the only, Mr. Royce Fisher. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, Rodney, what's going on? You doing all right?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm kind of having withdrawal from the Olympics, man. I hate to see them go. I really enjoyed them. But I think football season would take the place of that real quick.
Yeah, I think so too, man. Speaking of football season, a lot to talk about on that front. So where do we start? Do we start with who got cut, who's now playing? It's so much stuff going on. Twitter's a buzz. Our website's a buzz. Some of the big stories, of course, being the start of a lot of new quarterbacks, new rookies, but also the start of our team here locally, and that is the Dallas Cowboys. And I know you want to let
me
a little bit about how the Cowboys perform. I've got some pretty unique things to say as well, too. So I guess I should let you have the floor first, because I have a special secret weapon on my side when it comes to the Cowboys. I'm not going to say anything just yet, but I'll let you go ahead and get your little talk in before we go there.
Well, you know, I just came from outside. A storm is brewing in Dallas, not only on the Dallas, but on the Dallas Cowboys. Man, I tell you, you know, if you notice, I posted on the website 5 things I was going to watch last night on the Cowboys. Number 1 was Tony Romo. Number 2 was defense. Number 3 was the offensive line. Number 4 was the wide receivers. Number 5 was the running game. And if I had to give the Dallas Cowboys a grade from last night, that I call them not ready for primetime players, I would give them a D. That's all around, a D. I know you saw the game last night. As a Cowboy fan, how do you feel?
As a Cowboy fan, I was pretty upset by what happened last night. I'm going to be honest. I'm pretty upset because I expected, as I do every season, for them to be above and beyond a lot of teams. You know, I'm going to pick them to win regardless because I'm a true Cowboys fan. But I was very upset by what I saw last night. By the way, they didn't protect Romo. He's running around there for his life. Of course, he's got no one to throw it to since Miles Austin is hurting. And, of course, Dez Bryant only knows partial, you know, some plays of the playbook. But they didn't protect for him. The running game didn't really do well. The defense, I guess they were okay. They did pitch a shutout. But, again, they're playing against the Oakland Raiders, second and third teams. But at the same time, I was very, very disappointed by what I saw. Pretty upset by what I saw from the
Rodney,
Cowboys. I got to see more.
Rodney, you know, I saw Tony Romo. You know, I'm starting to feel sorry for Tony, because I think he's a good player on a bad team. As far as the defense, they did do a shutout. Wasn't anything spectacular. A few good plays. But I, you know, as a Cowboy fan, which I'm not really particular, I know you are, you had to be concerned about the offensive line. Do you know that Tony Romo was sacked 39 times last year? And the penalties, and I see him going 41 this year with the line y'all have. I saw nobody step up as the third wide receiver that I could even, you know, put a finger on, and the running game wasn't even there. But you had 12 penalties, 4 of them on special teams. You know, that shows me that they're nowhere near ready to start the season. That right there shows me a lot.
Well, again, curb a little bit there, because it is the first preseason game. I know you felt like they should do more. I felt the same way, too, but it is just the first preseason game. Without further ado, let me just stop the show real quick, just for the next 5 minutes. You know, you have beat me up about my love for the Cowboys for a very long time. Am I right or wrong?
You're absolutely right.
People have called in and bashed me for my love of the Cowboys for a long time. Chris has called in. He's always bashed me about my love for the Cowboys. You, of course, have always wanted me to pick another team. And I know it's been, I think it's been unfair. That's what I'm going to say. It's been really unfair to be the only guy on the show that really has a true silver and blue blood mentality for my hometown team. So I had to bring on some extra help today.
You need it.
I had to bring on some extra help today. Let me welcome to the program Stephen Nagy, the author of 101 Reasons to Love the Cowboys. Stephen, how are you tonight?
And 10 Reasons to Despise the Philadelphia Eagles and their fans.
There you go. Here we go. Welcome to the program, Stephen. If you would, go ahead and give us a little background. Of course, you wrote a book about the Dallas Cowboys. Give us a brief synopsis of what this book entails about the Cowboys.
Yeah, you know, pretty much. I'm 38 years old, so I've been a Cowboy fan, even though I'm a Jersey guy, since I was 7 years old in 81. So I put together, different reasons of my love for America's team. Obviously, in the audio book, you're going to focus a lot of in the 90s, you know, when they won the 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. My favorite Dallas Cowboy of all time, Emmitt Smith, is one of the reasons, along with a lot of his accomplishments. Just off the top of my head, I remember January 2nd, 1994, when the Cowboys were facing the Giants at the Meadowlands for the number one seed, and Emmitt took the Cowboys on his back in that overtime drive, which culminated in Eddie Murray kicking that game-winning field goal. But, if you're a Cowboy fan, it's just a great CD. And if you hate the Giants and the Eagles, it's a great CD, too, because I totally clown on them big time throughout the CD.
Let me ask you, though, a guy being from New Jersey, how did you end up being a Cowboys fan?
Yeah, everybody asks me that. Like I said, I started, really remembering football in the early 80s when I was 7, 8 years old. And, even though the Cowboys weren't winning Super Bowls at that time, they still were making it to the NFC Championship game. And, I got caught up in the hoopla with the commercials, Tom Landry and Too Tall Jones and Danny White. I just fell in love with them. And, they've been a big part of my life and my soul ever since.
Well, let me say this. I've been a Cowboy fan probably a lot longer than you have. I'm over 50 and under 60, so I'm not going to tell my age right off the bat, but I'm somewhere in between that. But I remember going to the first Cowboy game ever at State Fair, Texas, where they played at the Cotton Bowl. So I've been a fan for a long time. And let me ask you something. I've studied the Cowboys. I was a fan in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and I don't like this team. And I'm going to tell you why I don't like this team. I think it's a lack of mental toughness, and it starts with the head coach. I call him Dennis the Menace. I know y'all call him somebody else, but to me, he's Dennis the Menace. Simply by the fact that, the team goes as the coach goes. If you have a tough coach, you usually have a tough team. We've seen it with Andy Reid, Bill Carr, all those guys that's been around a while. I don't see it with this team. I don't think they have the mental toughness. We've seen it with the Giants, for the playoff game last year. That was a playoff game they played the Giants. And the Giants played mentally tough. Everybody that goes on to the Super Bowl is a mentally tough team. I don't see that with this team.
Well, that's a fair point right now. Especially some of the blunders, last year, one of the games, the obvious game that punch was in Arizona. With the timeout, situation. I remember watching the game and yelling at the screen to call a timeout because they definitely could have ran another play. It's going to come down to, like you were mentioning, one of the major concerns still is the offensive line. And, my two biggest concerns coming into this year were the offensive line and, as you also mentioned, special teams. Because I remember back in the early 90s when the Cowboys were blocking three, four punts
right.
A game, and Kmart was running punt returns back. And we really haven't seen that in a while. The one big plus, though, is that they did address the secondary. And that, to me, was the reason why the Cowboys couldn't hold on to leads, especially when they're playing good passing teams like the Giants and the Eagles. And even back in 07, when the Cowboys were 13-3 in the regular season and had the one seed, you know, they still were vulnerable to giving up big chunks of yardage through the air. So I think for the first time in a long time, this secondary will help. And also, they got to get back to creating turnovers and interceptions, which they haven't been doing as good a job with that either. I think that's going to be a big key in the season, is trying to create more turnovers as well.
We're joined by Stephen Nagy, author of the book, audiobook, 101 Reasons to Love the Dallas Cowboys. So glad you joined me, man. I finally got some backup. I finally got some true Cowboys backup. Before you go, we do have some callers calling in. We got people in the chat room going to ask you some questions and everything. Let me go ahead and bring on one of our callers here. Of course, let me first of all welcome another part of our sports team, Mr. Ryan Henry, who joins us. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
How you doing?
Good to have you on. But before we get to Ryan real quick, we have one other person that wants to get a comment in. Caller, you're live on RF Sports Radio. We're talking Dallas Cowboys. I love for the Dallas Cowboys. Go right ahead.
Oh, we on?
Yeah, caller, 5269. Tell us
why
you love the Cowboys.
I think you recognize my voice. This is host of Test Drive America. This is Chris Fischikoff. I was listening in, and I had to come in and come on this episode because my ears are not believing what I'm hearing right now. Okay, so let me get this straight. You have backup, and if I understand this correctly, you have a book, 101 Reasons to Love the Dallas Cowboys. Is that correct?
Yes,
that's correct.
Reasons to despise the Eagles and their fans. You're not an Eagle fan, are you,
okay.
sir?
Okay. Why would you write a book that's 101 Ways to Love the Dallas Cowboys? I mean, is this like an overall thing? Right now, there are not 101 reasons. There are not 10 reasons right now to be a Dallas Cowboys fan. It is, as far as their execution and as far as who they have up the staff making the decision, it's not going to work. I don't see any sort of, as long as Tony Romo's at the helm and you have Garrett, as far as back there, Colin plays, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. They will never win a ring with that combination.
Well, in defense for him, I think he's speaking mostly in terms of just an overall Dallas Cowboys, right? Not necessarily this team. But that brings me to another question, though, Stephen, before we let you go. Again, we're joined by Stephen Nagy, host, the author of the audiobook, 101 Reasons to Love the Dallas Cowboys. Before we let you go, and I let Ryan get a question in as well, I want to ask you, though, when you look at this team the way it's comprised right now, and you look at the teams in the 90s, of course, that when everyone loved the Cowboys, do you see the drop-off? Do you think this team is ever going to have a chance to win a title the way it's constructed right now?
If the offensive line, like I said, the biggest concern I have is the offensive line because, you know, what they have to do is not only give Romo enough time to throw the ball, but, you know, they also have to give him enough time where he's not taking as many hits as he has been taking in the past because I think he's like 31, 32 now.
Right.
And, you know, one of the big concerns is that, you know, can he complete the whole season? And even if he's completing the whole season, you know, you noticed that last year in the final game, even though he played, he did get his hand dinged up the week before against the Eagles. So, you know, if you're telling me the offensive line is going to play to a grade of a B or higher this year, then I'm feeling pretty good. One thing I do like is that they do have as the offensive line coach Bill Callahan, who they got from the Jets and who is the former head coach of the Raiders, who is, you know, respected as a great offensive line coach. So I do think if you were going to put a coach in that position, there would be no other person I would want at this point other than Bill Callahan.
You know, and I understand that they're juggling the lineup for the offensive line. But, you know, last year Tony Romo had, would you say, his best year. But he was sacked 39 times. I mean, and he was hurt the last couple of years because of that. I don't see any improvement on the line this year unless they go out and get somebody. They do have people they could trade to maybe get better at that, but I just don't see it. And like I said, no offensive line. They go as far as the offensive line go. I don't see them going very far with this lineup.
Ryan, what do you think?
I think you guys are right. I think that offensive line looks more like Swiss cheese than something that's actually going to put up any kind of defense against, especially the Giants front four. Like, you look at the front four that we have to deal with, just in our division, the Giants are going to tear us up every single time. I mean, they didn't look good against Oakland, and Oakland does not have a good defensive line. Like, they are not anywhere near the top of the NFL. And if we don't look good against Oakland, what do you think we're going to do when Pierce or Tuck or anyone else comes rolling through there?
Yeah.
Right. I think the real problem that you guys mentioned that it's Jason Garrett is the problem. I think it's Jerry Jones. I think Jerry Jones, the general manager, doesn't work. The team that we're winning with now is largely picked from people that we had during the Bill Parcells era. Tony Romo was brought in under Bill Parcells. Miles Austin under Bill Parcells. That offensive line that we had 3 years ago that was pretty decent was all people that were brought in during Bill Parcells. But now Jerry Jones has a little bit more pick of the personnel, and it should be no surprise that we're not doing nearly as well. We got really, really lucky with DeMarco Murray for, the 6 weeks that we had him before he broke his ankle?
Right.
And we're hoping that he can string together that same kind of run over the course of an entire season. But I think the real problem comes down to Jerry Jones.
But you do have to give him the credit because they got Tyron Smith in the draft.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I still ride with Jerry. I know he has made some bad judgment calls in the past, but there's one thing you can't say about Jerry. No matter how it gets done, he's going to do it his way. And I got a lot of respect for him. Again, before we let you go, Stephen, go ahead, if you can, let us know, let everyone know listening, how they can pick up your audio book.
I guess the easiest way is just to go to my agent's website, Barbara Bauer Literary Agency. It's bbla.com. You go on the front page, you click on to our client's work, and you'll see the icon right there. All you got to do is click on. We'll send the book out to you no matter where you are. And you could follow me at Nagy's Nest, the only nest where an eagle is not allowed to land. It's Nagysnest. And also, another fellow Cowboys fan, supermodel and actress Christy Bella Joyner, I recently wrote an article with her to raise cancer awareness. So if you just Google her name, you don't even got to Google my name, you'll eventually see it. You should check out that article, too, because it's for a good cause, and you'll see me in my suit there holding my Dallas Cowboy CDs with my couple rings on. I only got 2 rings on. I don't have 5 like the Cowboys.
All right, no doubt. Thanks for joining us, man. Make sure you definitely come back during the season.
I appreciate it. Have a good night, guys.
All right, too, man.
All right, I have a question for you.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you know, since we're talking about the Cowboys, I want to hear your thought on the receiving core. No Dez Bryant, no Miles Austin.
Do we have to talk about this? It's so much stuff to talk about.
Yeah, the last question. Where is Miles Austin? Where has he been the last 2 years?
Okay, well, again, he's been plagued by a hamstring injury. We know that's why he didn't play during the preseason game. And I don't know, mate. I don't think it's necessarily conditioning, but it got to be something. I mean, he just had this hamstring problem, and it'll be okay. It'll be all right. He'll be okay. He'll be just fine. He'll be just fine. Now, talking about wide receivers, let's jump to a wide receiver that we know is going to be looking for a job if he's not looking for one right now, and that's Chad Johnson. We got a chance to just watch Hard Knocks where he just got cut by Coach Philbin in front of the world to see, and that was an eye-opening moment for me because Chad came in very apologetic. He knew he had made a mistake. And I think he was kind of surprised by the whole move from Philbin. And now that I look back on it, when it broke, I was kind of like, okay, I understand what happened. But now I'm starting to think, like, maybe they made a mistake. Maybe it was a rush judgment call to really cut him like that.
I
disagree.
Go ahead. You can come in. I don't agree because if you watch the first episode of Hard Knocks, he was already disturbing with the team from get-go. He had to put him to the side and talk to him. I don't think that conversation they had was meant to be heard or seen on tape. But having said that, you don't want that distraction this early with your team. And really, the guy hadn't done anything to give you reason to keep it. He didn't do anything last year. He hadn't done anything since he'd been there. He'd just been loud and boisterous.
I agree with that. I don't think that he doesn't bring anything to the table. Like, if he couldn't do anything with Tom Brady passing him the ball, what makes you think he could do with whoever they decide to trot out in Miami? I guess it's Tannehill now, or whoever has a starting job down there. But he was just going to be a long-term, season-long distraction. They signed him at the beginning because they figured, hey, if he is a fraction of his former self, he's still an upgrade at the wide receiving core. But the moment that he decides to headbutt his wife, that's when he immediately becomes more trouble than he's worth.
Well, have you met his wife? I'm not trying to call anything different, but she's fought everybody on the show. So get those two together, I'm not surprised. But, it was unfortunate it happened. I was pulling for Chad. I really was pulling for Chad to make it this year. But, from what I saw in training camp, he couldn't even make separation from the defensive backs. I mean, he wasn't the guy getting open. He wasn't the guy making the plays. Matter of fact, he was the worst receiver out there on the field from what I saw.
They're only going to highlight the passes he dropped. Now, let's be honest. He was a number one option on offense. Until we know what Ryan Tannehill can do, him and Reggie Bush, the only two offensive options that they really have in that offense for the Dolphins. I mean, Chad was being Chad because he was having fun again. When he went to New England, we all know he couldn't say anything. He had to follow the Patriot way. He kept his mouth closed. But when he got back to Miami, to his hometown, he finally felt more comfortable. He was able to be Chad Johnson again, be loud, be voiceless. That's when he's at his best. When he had his best season was the season he was putting on the show after every touchdown. That's just what Chad Johnson does. You know you're going to get that.
When he had his best season, he was 28 years old. Like, he was never a very good route runner. He was always a speed guy. And now he's not fast enough to even get separation from, like, the rookie defensive backs that are defending him in Miami training camp. The knowledge of the game is there. He's not fast enough. He was always just a speed guy. The only reason why he did in Cincinnati is because he had Carson Palmer passing to him and T.J. Houshmandzadeh lining up opposite him. And Houshmandzadeh is actually a decent route runner. He had someone to go into the slot and take out and force those safeties to come down to give him that fly route.
And I agree with everything he's saying. Chad Johnson in Cincinnati was a star. Now, Tom Brady has made everybody that's come to the Patriots a better player. And he's a quarterback guy. They're passing defense, passing offense. And for him not to do anything in New England, I had to tell you something, Rodney.
Well, I understand it, but again, he's coming to a situation, doesn't know the playbook. We all know how complicated the New England offense can
be. That's no excuse.
The offense wasn't catered towards wide receivers. It was catered towards tight ends. That's what they use. They use Hernandez, Gronkowski. That's who they use. They didn't use any wide receivers to really want to cater that offense. They had to bring in Deion Branch, one of the only guys in the league that knows that system to be successful. The thing with Chad is, Chad's a good player. Chad's a good player. Now, he could have really took his time his first year as a head coach to take a stand by a player, and went over some of those players in the locker room. I think he's going to make more players really kind of, not look at him as a good coach by his move of cutting Chad so early, before we know all the facts, before we get due process. He just made a decision right off the bat.
Rodney, you mean to tell me that Branch and Randy Moss and Branch didn't flourish in New England?
Well, yeah, they did. We're forgetting one, Wes Welker. Like, he set an NFL record for receptions in a season in that New England offense. He had, 142 last season?
He
has absolutely flourished in that New England offense. And I don't buy the whole the New England offense is complicated, mainly because, his job is to play football. Like, if he can't come in there and learn the playbook, then maybe he shouldn't be playing football for a job.
Well, I can't argue with that. That I can't argue with. So you guys feel like it was the right move to go ahead and cut him.
It also sends a message to the rest of the team that says, we do not tolerate this kind, even thinking that you might be guilty of this kind of behavior. It sends the right message to the team as a whole, removes a potential distraction for the rest of the season, and makes it so that you can actually focus on developing your young guys as opposed to squeezing the last bit out of the player that used to be Chad Johnson.
And I think this sends a great message to the team to let them know that if we cut him, we'll cut anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I can understand that. I'm just looking at it a little bit different. I think that sometimes you have to make a football decision. A player's going to have stuff happen off the field. That's fine. But in sake for your football team, you're a better team with Chad Johnson than you are without one. I mean, we can all agree to that, right?
No. I'm not even sure that's true.
Come on.
I don't think Dallas needs a third receiver. Why don't you convince Jerry to pick him up?
Well, that brings me to my next question is, I want to ask you guys, does Chad Johnson end up playing football this year at all? And if so, who do you think will be a good fit for him?
Chad Johnson may end up playing football this season if someone gets injured. Like, if a second or third receiver gets injured and they go a couple of games and their fourth or fifth receiver doesn't actually perform very well, then he'll get a look from a team. Other than that happening, I don't think so. I would bet on Plaxico Burress getting a look before Chad Johnson does.
And I can agree with that. But, it only takes one owner to make that decision, and you're absolutely right. We don't know who's going to go down. That's the only way I can see him getting on the team, somebody goes down hurt. And like I said, I don't think Jerry would take a chance on him with the trouble they had with Dez Bryant. I just don't see Jerry doing that.
Well, that also assumes that he doesn't get suspended by the league.
Right.
True. That's true, too.
Goodell has already gone out and said that he doesn't want his league associated with miscreant behavior.
Well,
abuse falls into that category.
Well, you're right, but you think about this, this could be even more ironic. If Jerry goes out there and gets him, just imagine if he has Chad getting suspended and Dez Bryant getting suspended for the same amount of time. I don't know if he can run that risk. So I don't think the Cowboys take a chance on it. They've got one person to deal with that's got a pseudo domestic violence type of charge going on, although his mother's not going to press charges. But I think the team is going to pick him up pretty quick. I think so. But in Chad, just to be a little harsh on Chad, you can't make mistakes like this. I'm not condoning his behavior whatsoever. But he's had some really good situations. He, of course, owns Cincinnati. Could have been there, could have retired a Bengal, got cut there, goes to New England, goes all the way to the Super Bowl, catches one pass, doesn't have a great season there, can't learn the playbook, gets cut there. Then goes and plays for his hometown team and gets cut there as well, too, for something dumb and something that happened off the field, trying to be a reality TV star. So I don't feel sorry for Chad, but I think eventually he's going to end up playing with somebody.
Well, you could be right. We've seen T.O. come back and Randy Moss. So, we saw Randy Moss quit on the team. We know the distraction that T.O. had with the teams he's been on. So, who knows, but I can't see it anytime soon.
I think there's a big difference between Chad Johnson and Randy Moss and Terrell Owens. Owens and Randy Moss were absolute game changers on their own. Randy Moss had Chris Carter playing opposite him, but he was an absolute monster. Like, you had, like, Chris Carter got as many yards as he did because we had to triple-team Randy Moss over and over again. So you look at, like, his numbers declined in Oakland, but they were still better than everyone else. Like, Randy Moss is an absolute just physical, like, beast.
Right.
And same thing with Terrell Owens. Like, Terrell Owens, the stuff that he put up, the numbers he put up in Philadelphia and in San Francisco and in Dallas especially, like, you look at those, some of those are some of the best seasons ever had by a wide receiver.
Chad Johnson had to prepare for those guys.
Yeah, Chad Johnson never had really that type. Like, he put up some good numbers, but he was never really that game-changing talent that Randy Moss, like, you never looked at that and said, okay, we only have to cover Chad Johnson.
Right.
And then we can shut them down. You'd say, we have to cover Chad Johnson, and Hushmanzada is going to ding us up a little bit, and then they're going to dump it off to, can't remember who the running back was at the time, but, like, they had a pretty, like, solid offense all around. It wasn't all Chad Johnson.
I
don't think it's fair to draw the comparison. I think that's giving Chad Johnson too much credit.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. I think Chad's a great. I think he'll end up somewhere. We'll find out if he has anything left, and probably find out this season if he has something left. Let's jump into the NBA real fast, fellas. Dwight Howard, the trade goes through. I knew it was coming. I think some of the people, I know Royce didn't think it was coming. But it did finally come down. They do get the trade. Dwight Howard's the L.A. Laker now. Of course, he's not going to re-sign until the end of the season. We know that as well, too. But with this shift of Dwight Howard going to the Lakers along with Steve Nash, does that make the Lakers the Kings of the West or even the Kings of the NBA?
I say they're the second best. I'm still going to give a nod to Oklahoma City. But how in the world did the Lakers pull that off? And what in the world was Miami thinking not to take Paul Gasol?
Orlando.
After what I've seen him do in the Olympics, for them to just give him away and get nothing in return, I don't understand that. I think the general manager in Miami needs to be fired because that was a bad – you gave away the best center out there now, and you got nothing in return.
He got a bunch of – 20 to 30 draft picks and a couple of second rounders and not a whole lot else. Like, L.A. absolutely made out like a bandit. They were going to make out pretty well if they landed Dwight Howard to begin with, but not having to give up Pau Gasol, I think it puts them in the probably the best team in the West. I don't think they can beat Miami. I think it really depends on how hungry LeBron is come NBA Finals time.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Catch you up.
I was going to say the reason. I mean, I don't think that Steve Nash can guard Dwayne Wade,
and
it all starts and stops with the point guard. I think offensively they're a better team. Defensively, I don't think they're as good.
Dwight Howard going to the Lakers, gentlemen, that is what we call tradition, okay? This is what happens. Every big man, seven-footer, with a skill, considered to be one of the best at the time, they all go through L.A. George Mikan, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaq, and now Dwight Howard adds his name to that list as well, too. It's tradition. It had to happen. Eventually, he had to go to L.A. and play in the purple and gold. Now, does that make them the best team in the West? Perhaps it does. Now, the thing is, you can't count Oklahoma City because if you're looking at USA versus Spain final, four players in the starting five of Oklahoma City were playing. Four out of the starting five. But you look at the Lakers, they could have easily had four in the starting five as well. They could have had two players. Or more, if Dwight Howard would have played, they would have had three players in the starting lineup for that game. But Oklahoma City had four young guys in their starting lineup playing in their Olympic final. That tells you just what kind of talent they really have. But can they afford to keep all four of those young players next season, season after that? The Lakers are pretty much wrapped up. I mean, they might not do it the first year, but I see them definitely getting it done by that second year.
For that reason, I am giving Oklahoma City a nod, because you did say they had the four players in the Olympics. But, you know, we've seen this experiment in L.A. before with Karl Malone, Gary Payton, that team, and they didn't win a championship. So who's
this
to say
that? This is nothing like that, though. This is nothing like that.
Well, they were all-stars. Every one of those guys I named are all-stars. And that's what you have on this team now. But who's to say that it's going to work? Even if they can play well together. And, like, I agree with what he said earlier about Steve Nash is not a good defensive player. So, I mean, you got two or three good players, but so does every other team.
I don't think it's fair to draw the comparison between this team and that Karl Malone, Gary Payton team, which still made it to the NBA Finals, mainly because Karl Malone, that was his last year in the league. He was 100 years old when he was playing for the Lakers.
Right.
Dwight Howard is, how old is he, like 24? Like, he's young. He's in the, prime
Kobe
of
old.
His career.
Kobe Lowe, Paul Gasol, he's up there. Steve Nash is definitely up there. So you do have a nucleus of old and new, like the last team.
I mean, Paul Gasol is, he's up there, but he's still... He's closer to his prime than he is to being retired. And
right.
Kobe's up there, but I think if you take some of that offensive pressure off of him, which they certainly do with Steve Nash and Dwight Howard, like, banging down there in the post, you actually have, like, point guard play was the weakest, like, the weakest part of LA's game last year. And you upgrade from, Blake to Steve Nash? I'll tell you which Steve I'd rather have, and it's not Blake.
Right. and you know, on that, but I'm still going to give the nod to Oklahoma City because they are young, they are talented, and they did keep the nucleus of this team. They've been to the finals. We saw the same thing with Miami. They went to the finals. They didn't win. But I think Oklahoma is going to be a better team this year. And I'm not ready to crown L.A. champions yet, not just yet.
Well, let's talk about Team USA. We just mentioned how a lot of these players that we're talking about are teams, have players playing in this final. Team USA does get the gold medal. They beat Spain 104-88. In your opinion, Royce, I'll start with you. Who was the MVP for this USA basketball team?
Oh, Kevin Durant, without a question. I thought Carmelo Anthony and, you know, a lot of guys had a good Olympic series, but Kevin Durant, I got to give him 156 points, the most ever scored by anybody playing Olympic basketball. And I'm telling you, his shots counted when the USA was running behind or even in danger. He hit the big shots, and I thought he was the MVP of the Olympics.
And Ryan, what do you think? Well, who's the MVP?
I think we lost him.
Did we lose him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead and give us your take, Rodney.
Ryan, if you're listening, go ahead and give us a call back, buddy. I think we lost you. In my opinion, I got to go with Kevin Durant, too, for the same reasons. I think when they needed a shot, he was the go-to guy to really get it done. And also, I think he deserved it. I mean, he did wonders for them back in 2010 when they had the championship. He was the MVP then. I think now he's come of age and become MVP for Olympic gold medal. And LeBron, a lot of people say LeBron should get it. No doubt in my mind, LeBron, it was really LeBron's team. He was more of the facilitator,
right,
being that he's been in this, this is his third year in the third time in the Olympics.
Right.
And it tends to be the first athlete, the first basketball player to compete in four Olympics when they go to Rio. So he's becoming, you know, this is his team type of thing. But Kevin Durant, no doubt about it, was the best shooter that they had. He's the biggest matchup problem that they had, other than LeBron going against some of the inferior talent across the league, of course. But you can say that about any player.
And LeBron would be my second choice. Like you said, he was the leader of this team. He had a triple-double, which is unheard of in the Olympics. But I was really pissed with Spain and the Gasol brothers. I thought they played fantastic. I think Paul Gasol found new legs. I think he's going to be a beast when he comes out this year. If we get that same kind of Paul Gasol that we saw in the Olympic, on the Lakers team, I mean, the West, you might as well crown them the West champions.
Man, trying to get Ryan back on here. Ryan, if you're listening, give us a call back. Speaking of the Olympics themselves, let me ask you, Royce, what do you think about the Olympics overall? I mean, it was a pretty good Olympics. What really stood out with you this particular 2012 London Olympics?
Well, Rodney, I was impressed. You know, U.S. won 107 medals total. They beat everybody. But I'm tell you, I was more impressed with the women. We saw the women dominate the swimming, the water polo, the soccer, the beach volleyball, the gymnastics. And I thought we had a 15-year-old swimming, you know, on the women's swim team. I thought the women were fantastic, man. Even in the relays, they won the relay. I thought the women really dominated. It was great to watch. You know, a lot of stars came out of the Olympics. People we never heard of. I thought it was just fantastic. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, are you there? Okay.
Hello? I'm trying to patch him through here.
Okay, hold on just a minute, Ryan.
Okay, I'm trying to get him back on. All right, Ryan, are you there? Okay, well, if you're listening, give us a call. Right back. Sorry about that. Trying to get him on the air to talk a little bit about the Olympics. In my opinion, I think the biggest thing that happened, other than Usain Bolt and what he was able to do, of course, you can look at what Michael Phelps was able to do, but for me, it was about Gabby. It was about what she did, being the first African-American to really dominate the gymnastics like she did. I think that's pretty much huge. I mean, that's history-setting stuff right there that I'm glad I had a chance to really see.
Yeah, you're right. That's why I gave it to the women, because of Gabby, too. And, you know, the women's basketball, we hadn't even talked about them, but they won, what, like 30-some games in a row? They haven't lost in years, and they were dominant, too. That's why I say I thought the women just really dominated the Olympics. And to me, the favorite moment was watching them win, you know, and to help us get those 107 medals. You know, I thought they did a great job. I mean, I enjoyed even handball. And I watched a lot of water polo. I watched a lot of Olympics. BMX racing, you know, I thought it was great. I hate it. I didn't get to see a lot of it. I wish it had been on like the whole 24 hours. I think I would have watched it for the whole 24 hours. But other than that, I thought the U.S. did great. And I can't wait till it's in Brazil, and I plan on being there.
Yeah, I plan on being in Brazil, too. I think that's going to be the best opening ceremony ever.
Right,
in the Olympics. It's going to be
Carnival.
I think it's going to be the best one ever. Okay, we got Ryan back on with us. Sorry, Ryan, I don't know what happened, but no technical difficulty there. We got you back on the air with us. We're talking about the Olympics. What was your biggest moment watching the Olympics for London 2012?
I really liked watching Kayla Harrington win her judo medal. The first medal ever won by a woman, first gold medal, sorry, ever won by a U.S. woman in judo. And while I don't understand a single, like, I had no idea what was going on, the announcers, I think, realized that and did their best to explain it. But her story is absolutely amazing. She had started judo at a young age and then was sexually molested by her then coach. And then her family uprooted her, took her to Massachusetts, and she fell in with her coaches where she eventually won the gold medal from Massachusetts. So watching the adversity that she had to fight through and the look on her face when she realized that she had finally won was just, I think, one of the coolest moments that I had the pleasure of watching.
And you know, there were a lot of great stories as far as the women were concerned. That's why I said I thought they really were great, and I'm giving them the nod. You know, even the girl from Colorado that had to go through what she went through the week before before going to the Olympics. And, of course, now, Rodney, you mentioned Gabby. You know, a lot of great stories came out of this year's Olympics.
It's actually also one of the first times that North and South Korea amiably competed in the same game. You had
the two of them met up.
And we had countries like Saudi Arabia where women actually participated in the Olympics. You know, that's the first time for them.
Oh, yeah.
And some of those countries, yeah. I thought that was really great, too.
Okay, so let me ask you guys, if you were the head of the IOC and they wanted to come to you and say, you know what, we can take something out of the Olympics and maybe put something in before Rio in 2016. If you had to take an event out or put one in, which one would it be, Royce?
Well, if it's going to be in Rio, I'd say swimsuit competition. I would love to see it in Rio. I would have to say the swimsuit competition brought in. Yes, especially for the Rio game.
Ryan, what do you think?
I think we really, like, boxing needs a lot of reform.
Right, yeah, right.
We talked about this last week with how the judging system is really messed up. It's very different. The amateur boxing is very different from professional boxing. They either need to do something to reform it or maybe bring it in line, remove some of the potential judging errors that could cost people medals. Something needs to be done about that before we have another Olympic Games, and maybe they're working on a solution. And putting it back in, I'd love to see baseball back in. I love baseball, and it's a shame that it got taken out, but at the same time, I'd love to see it put back in.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool. You know what I'd like to see in Olympics, you know, I know we're doing basketball. What if we had a 3-on-3 tournament in the Olympics? I mean, you know, some kind of hoop it up style, 3-on-3. That'd be kind of cool. I would think it'd be kind of cool. And then I didn't realize this until someone brought it up to me today. You know, back when the Olympics started, you know, one of the biggest events that they used to have was tug of war.
Right.
I mean, just imagine having tug of war against another country on the beach in Rio. You know, that would be kind of cool to me to have tug of war.
And, you know, they just about put in just about every sport there is in now. You have BMX, you have skating. I mean, you have the handball was really fun to watch. You know, I hadn't seen that before. I thought that was, took me a while to get on to it. But you're absolutely right. I agree with him about the boxing. It was some of the worst officiating I've seen in the Olympics. And I think we got robbed in that. And I would like to see them overhaul that.
You know, before we go, I want to do acknowledge Ryan Henry. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter, @D_RyanHenry. And you wrote an article last week about the MVP race for both the American League and National League. We got a lot of responses back from. Matter of fact, we received an email from a gentleman that wanted to know why you thought some of the names, I think you said you left out a name. I'm trying to find the guy's email real quick. He was asking about Mike Trout. You had Mike Trout as your number one person for the AL MVP. And I don't know why, but he seems to think that you should have our own Josh Hamilton as number one.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Josh Hamilton needed to not bat below the Mendoza line for all of June and July. If he had kept up what was going on in April and May, then absolutely he's having an MVP-type season. But he was barely batting his weight for the last 2 months. And he's seen a little bit of a resurgence, but you look at what Mike Trout's putting together down there in L.A., and I don't see really how he can be touched. He's batting almost 400. He's probably, like, he is the best shot for someone to win a Triple Crown this year.
I can agree with that. And I have a question right quick. I know it's what has happened to the Rangers? Why have they fallen off?
They're not getting consistent production from their pitching staff, and the lineup actually isn't hitting very much. So you see kind of a dual slump, which usually you would hope that if your hitters are having a slump, your pitching would step up, or if your pitchers are having a slump, maybe you get a little bit extra run support in there. But we're just not getting those timely hits. You're watching Mike Young actually fly out, which isn't something he did all of last year. And he's done it a few times this year. So you just watch Mike Young not hitting those same clutch hits that we're accustomed to seeing. Beltre is – I feel kind of sorry for Beltre. I say all of our hitters are in a slump. Beltre, if there was going to be a Ranger that's in the MVP discussion, it's Beltre, not Hamilton. Just because he has been producing at a high caliber all season. Andrews would be the other one, although he had his own little hitting slump a few weeks ago. But you're just you're not seeing those same clutch hits, and the pitching isn't quite up to par. You're watching Dempster just getting absolutely blown up by whoever he tries to pitch against.
I mean, two out of three games for Dempster, he's pitched. He's given up eight runs in two out of the three games that he's pitched. I mean, we make a trade for this guy. I'm thinking he's going to help us push us over the edge, and he hasn't really done much to really help us. He got that run support that first game that gave us the win, but ever since then, it's, you know, they're like the last game they just played. That was against the Yankees. He did a terrible job. One thing I want to ask you about the article you wrote is I have one disagreement with you, and that's in the National League. I think there's no doubt in my mind it's got to be Andrew McCutchen, the number one guy. He's got to be the MVP for the National League. What he's done, not just for his numbers as an individual, but just for the Pirates alone. You know, the way he's kind of brought them to the forefront and the stuff he's been able to do this season, I think it's just inevitable that they're going to give it to him.
I mean, I actually agree with you. In my final paragraph, he's my National League pick as far as who the voters are going to go for. But the reason why I have Braun up there over McCutchen is if you look at them statistically, they're having very, very similar seasons, and Braun doesn't have nearly the type of lineup protection that McCutchen has. Like, Pittsburgh is blowing up, and McCutchen's, granted, is a very, very large reason behind that, but Braun has no one following him. Granted, I really don't think they're going to give it to Braun because of the performance-enhancing drug allegations that haunted him during this past offseason, and in fact, he probably shouldn't even been playing had it not been for a favorable appeal. Otherwise, he would have been out, the first 100 games of this season? Would have gotten the Manny Ramirez treatment. And so because of those allegations, I don't think that voters are going to give him the MVP award, that's for sure. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think McCutchen is going to win it, but I think if it went to statistically who's doing the best, I think the lineup behind Braun is more lacking than the lineup behind McCutchen. So it's just like that little hair of a difference.
Yeah, I can understand that. Well, guys, we do have a tweet from Ocho Cinco. I've been trying to send him some tweets all day. We finally have a tweet from him. We tweeted this a little while ago. He says, "I haven't had to tread water in a long time. Special thank you to my fans, family, friends for keeping me afloat." So he makes a statement. Now, his wife, on the other hand, has decided to make a statement as well, too. And she's went ahead and filed for a divorce. She also said that Chad needs some help. And, I think I kind of guessed that she would take this time to kind of enhance her brand, I guess the best way to put it.
Yeah, you know, you had to be suspect about their marriage to begin with. They met on tweet, and their whole romance played out in front of the public eye. You know, it's unfortunate that it happened. You know, they wasn't married, a couple of weeks?
July, we got married.
You know, I'm not surprised, but, you know, we've seen this. It's unfortunate for Chad. I think she's going to really ride this thing for the publicity. So it canceled their show, though. The show was scheduled for September the 3rd. I know that's gone. But, you know, football season upon us. Chad's gone. We have to move on. There's a lot we're going to talk about in the future. A lot of quarterbacks I saw that I was impressed with. And we have to get into that on next show, Rodney.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But before we go, I want to thank everyone for listening. Remember to go to the website, rfsportsradio.com. to follow us there. Before we go, real quick, let's go around. Starting with you, Ryan. You saw first week NFL preseason. What did you see that really surprised you? Who are you excited about watching this season?
I'm excited to watch Andrew Luck this season. He had a terrific first game. Now, the question did he have a terrific first game in the same way that Peyton Manning had a terrific first game, or did he have a terrific first game in the same way that Ryan Leaf had a terrific first game?
Ooh, good one. That sounds like a juicy article, my friend.
So I'm looking for, now, granted, I don't think he's going to go the Ryan Leaf way because there are some other issues that were following him around, but Andrew Luck is the person I'm most looking forward to watching this season.
There's three people I'm looking at. Andrew Luck is one of them. I have to agree with him on that. Robert Griffin the third, and Peyton Manning and Denver. Those are the three things that I'm going to look for.
I think what I'm looking for is, of course, the rookie quarterbacks. And I'm kind of getting interested in this whole thing that's happening in Seattle with Russell Wilson. Of course, they made the trade to get Matt Flynn to get there. They've got Tavares Jackson, but it looks like Russell Wilson will go ahead and get hopefully get the nod to play. So I'm really intrigued about that and what they're doing in Seattle, bringing in T.O. I'm also intrigued by the battle in Miami with Tannehill and how he's looked. And then, of course, Arizona. I don't think they even need a quarterback in Arizona. They have nothing. Nothing in Arizona. They got the best wide receiver in the game, and no one is throwing the ball. So I'm a little intrigued about that, too. But that's been our show tonight, guys. Again, tune in on Thursday night, 10:30 p.m., same time, same way. Whatever you did to find us tonight, you can find us the same way again tomorrow. Until then, make sure you follow our website, rfsportsradio.com. Also follow Ryan Henry at @_RyanHenry on Twitter and follow us at RF Sports Radio. Until next week, you've been listening to Sports Talk from a Fan's Perspective when you want it, rfsportsradio.com.